3.5 years ago, Janice and I started doing yoga. And it happened while we were on sabbatical in Montana. We had a time of sabbatical where the elders of our church came and said, you've been doing ministry for a long time, and you guys should take 3 months off. And so we lived in Missoula, Montana for most of that time. And yes, Missoula. All right. And Jason grew up in Missoula. So go Grizz, right? You guys don't know what that means. Okay, sorry. University of Montana, Grizzlies. But we were in Missoula, and we decided we want to try something new. We want to learn something new or do some kind of new practice. And we'd have friends that had done yoga before, and they had told us we should give it a try. And so we thought, we'll give it a try. Now, let me just say, I am not a flexible person. I am not a limber person. And the idea of sweating with a whole bunch of people is not exciting to me, right? And so, I should also say, I grew up in the South, in like conservative family and conservative culture. And yoga is something like the Buddhist hippie weirdos did. Like in the South, we did NASCAR, right? That's what we did. That's, you know. And so it was just kind of outside of our comfort zone. In fact, I even had a professor in seminary that said, you know, Christians shouldn't do yoga because it's sort of founded in Buddhism and Buddhist religion and all those things. And I just sort of disagree. I mean, there's certainly people that do yoga out of Buddhist sort of convictions or that background, but there's a lot of people who don't. I don't, and I'm a follower of Jesus, and I think it's more about what someone brings to it and the approach they have. The Olympics, you know, the Olympics were grounded in Greek mythology and Greek religion. It was a worship service to Zeus, and I'm pretty sure we're not going to be doing that in February when we all turn on our TVs and watch the Olympics. So I think it's really about what you bring to it, but the point is, this was really outside of our comfort zone to give this a try, but we decided to give it a try. So we found this little studio in Montana. It was called Hot House Yoga, and they had this introductory rate, and we went, and we started with this thing called Hot Yoga. Have you guys ever done hot yoga? It's hot, you know? And so basically what they do is you go through, over the course of a class, it's about an hour or an hour and a half, depending on the class, and you go through these 26 different postures. And you do the same ones every single time you go, and you go through these 26 different postures, and you hold these postures for a certain length of time. And I thought it would be cool to teach you guys a couple of the postures today. So here's what we're going to do. I know you're freaking out right now, but I want everyone, if you're able, I want you to stand right now. So come on, give it a try. If you've got an injury and you can't do this, like, then don't try it. But everyone else, you don't have any excuses. All right, so stand up. So here's what I want to teach you. I want to teach you two postures just so you kind of get a sense of what we did. And this is going to be fun, all right? Fun, smiles, smiles on your faces. Yes, Eric's got a smile. So first thing I want you to do, this first one's called Tadasana. Tadasana, that means mountain pose. So you can put your feet together, all right? Feet together, toes together. Now, it's easier to do this without shoes, but we all have shoes on, and it would be weird if we took them all off. Leave a sliver space between your heels a little bit, and then you just want to stand up straight, all right? Roll your shoulders back and then down a little bit. All right, now do this. Bring your hands to center. So this is like, some people call this prayer pose. The name for it is Samasthitihi. Essentially, this is a grounding pose, and most yoga practices start with this pose. It's a way of sort of grounding the practice, and I love it because it reminds me when I first start that this is like a prayer to God. Like, I'm walking in, I'm going to spend this hour with God, and this is a way of being with Him. Okay, so that's easy. That's easy pose, right? All right, next one, you're going to stay where you are. You're going to put your hands on the chair in front of you. This next one's called Vrikshasana, which means tree pose, all right? So hands on the chair in front of you, and I want you to raise up your right leg, like so. All right, you can keep maintaining the balance. No, not yet, Phil, all right? And then move your leg out, and you'll put it on your calf, right? Now, if you really want to go for it, you can bring it all the way up to your thigh like that, but not your knee. But let's just stick with the calf for this morning, all right? So put it there. Now I want you to let go of and come back to prayer posture. All right, we're going to hold this for 2 minutes. You guys ready? All right. Okay, that's it. Good job. Give yourself a hand. All right. So that's So that's Tadasana and Vrikshasana. And those are two of the poses. Now, there's 26 of them, and those are the easiest ones, all right? So there's some that you do standing, and there's some that you do laying down. So you go through all these. But the thing that most people know most about hot yoga is the fact that it's hot. And so you walk into this room, and it's 105 degrees. Yes. It's like traveling to Texas. You know when you get off the plane and the heat and humidity just like knocks you over? That's what it's like when we first walked in to the yoga studio. So let me tell you about the first time I did hot yoga. I walked in and it was that hot and it's kind of dark. It was a small studio. There's like 10 or 15 people there and they were all laying on their mats and it's kind of dark. And so I laid down on my mat as well. I'm laying there sort of preparing for the class. And sweat is already, before class even begins, it's starting to bead up and trickle on my skin. And this is before class starts. 10 minutes in, the beads and trickles have turned to full-on streams, right? But we go through these 26 postures, and they're tough, and you have to hold them. You do hold them for 30 seconds or a minute or at a time, and I'm falling over. But the teacher's really good, and she's sort of teaching us. And the teacher that I first had, her name was Isabel that summer, and she was amazing. She had the most gentle but firm voice. And so she would lead us through these postures, and she would teach, and I was a beginner, so she was great. She would come by and sort of show me how to get in them and what to do. But by the end of the class, I mean, I was spent and worn out, and puddles of sweat are laying around my mat, and I'm laying there. But I'll never forget, one of the last poses you do is called Shavasana. You might have heard of that. Which literally means corpse pose. So you're laying on corpse, yeah, because you're dead at the end of it, basically. Let's be honest. So you're laying on your mat, it really means that. You're supposed to just lay and sort of just totally rest and let go of everything in your body at the end of this practice. And it's sort of, the lights are low, and she tells us to open our palms and just be in a posture. And she starts talking about surrender. Now, you have to remember, I'm on sabbatical. I've been doing ministry for many years. I'm tired. I mean, I wasn't like at the end of my rope sort of tired, but I was tired. And so we're there, and I'm worn out from an hour of yoga that I've never done before. I'm laying there, and she starts saying, this is when you just surrender, and you let go, and you surrender control, and you surrender your anxieties, and you just let go. And then Isabel walked up, and she placed this ice-cold, wet washcloth on my forehead. And it smelled of lavender and lemongrass. And it was like Jesus laid down right beside me. I mean, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit gave me a group hug in that moment. It was the most amazing thing. I mean, I had never felt more rested and renewed and restored than I had ever felt in that moment, just laying there and surrendering. Now, let me tell you why I share this. It's kind of a strange introduction to a sermon. It's not to get you all to consider going to yoga, although if you want, come talk to me afterwards. I'll tell you all about it. But it's because something interesting also happened that summer. While we were on sabbatical, we were also not here. So I wasn't going to church here, right? And so we decided we would go to other churches and just visit other churches in Montana and even some of the weeks we were here in Denver. And for the first time in a long time, I was just visiting. I was just like you. I was just attending. I didn't have to prepare a sermon. I didn't have any responsibility. We didn't have anything to do. We were just showing up and attending church. As we were doing this new practice that we started doing, we would start doing it every day of the week almost in Montana. And then on Sundays, we were attending these new churches. Something interesting struck me. That going to yoga is actually a lot like going to church. Or maybe more specifically, going to church should maybe be a whole lot more like going to yoga than we think. Now, I grew up going to church all the time. I grew up in the South. Maybe you grew up going to church. We were super committed. My parents took me every single Sunday. And we went to Sunday school and church. How many Sunday school people? Yeah, a bunch of you. We went to Sunday school and then church. And so I remember we would get there at 9:15 and we didn't leave till 12:45. So 3.5 hours. every Sunday morning. And it was just, I mean, we went, unless we were out of town, we went every Sunday, right? I mean, life revolved around church. We didn't plan anything else on Sundays because that slot was already taken. Like, it was just already a part of the schedule. Now, as a kid, I didn't hate church, but I didn't love it either. We sang songs, these old hymns with an organ that sounded nothing like any of the music I listened to, right? And I had to dress up and wear nice clothes, which I wasn't super excited about. And I didn't listen to the sermons very much, and when I did, they weren't very helpful. So it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't something I looked forward to. I didn't enjoy it, and it certainly wasn't something I would have invited any of my friends at school to come to as well. But it just felt like something I had to do, right? It's something we do. It's something good Christians do. They go to church, like they go to mass or they go to church every single week. But what happens when you go to college? What happens when you move away from home and you don't have to go anymore, right? Or you don't have to go because your parents aren't expecting you to go, or no one else is expecting, or it's not even the thing you're supposed to do anymore. What you do when you're in college or when you hit your 20s are the things you want to do, the things you enjoy doing. And if you don't enjoy or want to go to church, you just don't go anymore. And I'm guessing a lot of us made that decision when we hit college or hit our 20s. We stopped going to church, and it wasn't because you stopped believing in God, right? I mean, you still believed in God. You just didn't have to go every Sunday to prove your belief in God. Which brings up an interesting question. Why go to church to begin with anyways? I mean, if you shouldn't go out of sort of guilt or shame or the sense of that's what good Christians should do and that's what you're supposed to do, I mean, because you should never like force yourself to do something that you don't want to do. That's not a good recipe for long-term success. And that's why some churches have actually figured out, you know, if people aren't coming because they're not enjoying it, then maybe we just need to make church a lot more enjoyable. Maybe we just need to make church way more cool and way more fun and way more entertaining. And there's a good intentions there, right? I mean, I hope you don't hate coming to New Denver Church, right? I hope you don't hate it. And yet, if the goal is to make it more fun and cool and entertaining, there's an inherent danger there as well. It kind of teaches you, well, you should only do things that are fun and cool and entertaining. And if you can find anything else to do on Sunday morning that's more fun or more cool or entertaining, and we live in Colorado, there's a lot of things to do that are way more fun or way more entertaining, then you should just go do those. So if you shouldn't go to church because you have to, but you also shouldn't go just because it's fun and cool and entertaining, then why should you go? Why show up on Sunday morning at 9 a.m.? Well, the Bible never answers this question directly, but it does describe what some of the early Christians did when they went to church. I want to read you a few verses. This is what it says. This is from the book of Acts. It says this early on, Acts chapter 2. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes, and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts. So the early followers of Jesus would meet in their homes, but then they would also meet at the temple every day. And this was before Christians started getting persecuted, but they started meeting at the temple in larger groups, and eventually they started doing that on Sundays. That became the day that they would gather together. And it says when they gathered together that they would there was a teaching element, or what we would now call preaching. They did it for fellowship, which just means just to be together, like just to be with one another. Breaking of bread, that meant probably they shared a meal. Maybe they all bring food and sandwiches and they shared a meal. Or maybe it specifically refers to them remembering what Jesus did on the cross and taking communion together. And then also prayer. It says they prayed when they came together. Now we know they also sung songs together. Acts doesn't mention it here, but Paul talks about in a couple other verses. Let me read you those. This is what he says in one letter to a church in Ephesus. Be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. Sing and make music from your heart to the Lord. And then he says in another letter, let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through what? Through psalms and hymns and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your heart. So singing was important too. They gathered together, they would sing, and it wasn't just for the purposes of worshiping God, although that was clearly in the middle of it, but it was also, it says, to encourage one another. There was something unique that happened when people came and sung songs together. It was a way of teaching and admonishing and encouraging one another as they sung these songs together. In fact, encouragement was really at the center of it all. One more verse. This is from the book of Hebrews. Look at what the writer of Hebrews says. Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. That's basically the way of Jesus, following the way of Jesus. How can we spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit or practice of doing, but encouraging one another? In other words, the reason we gather is to encourage one another, to spur one another on, to be there for one another. Paul says in another place that we do this to build one another up, that there's something, there's a strengthening and building up that happens when we gather together, that God uses this time when we meet in this building during this hour and sing some songs and do some things together for us to encourage and build one another up, that he forms us through this, which means you don't come to church just to be entertained. And you don't come out of obligation because you're supposed to, or that's what people are supposed to do. It means what I think coming to church is a practice. It's a practice. And remember, practices are anything that you intentionally do that over a long period of time end up forming you or shaping you into the kind of person that you want to be. Which is why that summer, as we started doing this strange yoga practice every day of the week, and then we started visiting these other churches and thinking about why do we even go to church to begin with on Sundays, I started to think going to church is just another practice. And it could be a practice like my son goes to football practice, or a practice like exercising, or tennis practice, or even yoga practice. And so I began to learn, as God began to teach me, what church could actually be like if we saw it this way. So I want to share with you a few more observations about what I think church could be like, or what I think God taught me through going to yoga. First, no judgment. No judgment. When I first started going to yoga, one of our teachers would say all the time, there's no judgment here. And in fact, just this past week, one of my favorite teachers said in our class, there's no judgment here. And basically what they meant was, when you look around, it doesn't matter if you have a cooler mat than everyone else, or like what you're wearing, or how good your practice is, or if you're like doing the postures really awesome, or you're way better than the person next to you, or way worse than the person. There's no judgment here. We don't compare ourselves to one another. Shouldn't church be that way? And shouldn't we come into this place and say, there's no judgment here? It doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter how your week was. It doesn't matter what you bring in. It doesn't matter the doubts or the questions or the shame or the guilt or the argument you have with your kids on the way to church that morning. Whatever you bring in, we don't compare ourselves to one another. There's no judgment here. Here's another observation. Setting our intentions. When you go to yoga, they do this interesting thing in the beginning. Oftentimes, the teacher will say, let's just pause. And oftentimes, it's during this Tadasana, Samasthiti pose. And let's set our intentions. Why are you at yoga today? What do you want to get out of the next hour? What's your intention? Shouldn't we do that when we come on Sunday mornings? I mean, what would it look like is if you're walking in this building, or you come early and you're sitting down, or during that first song or the second song, you just pause and you don't even have to sing the words for a few minutes. And you just set your intentions. And you said, this is why I'm here, God. Because you're not just saying it yourself. You're sort of saying it to God too. This is why I'm here, God, today. This is my intention. Now, what is that? I'll give you some suggestions about what that intention could be. But if we all did that, if we were that, wouldn't that be that much more purposeful and intentional about why we're gathering together? Here's another observation. This shouldn't be passive entertainment. And I noticed this at yoga very quickly. There is no entertainment value whatsoever in yoga. Like, there is nothing to consume there. It is the exact opposite of sitting on your couch and watching an hour of TV. And what I thought about is when you sit on your couch and watch an hour of TV, and we've all done it, you're not actively engaged in something. It's so passive that oftentimes, and we've all done this, where you've actually sat there and you watched for several hours, and you realize you're way more lethargic and lazy and tired and drained than you were before. It's like it drains energy from you. But whenever you're actively engaged in something, and again, that can be sports, that can be gardening, that can be cooking, that can be yoga, whatever. Whenever you're actively engaged in something, there's something life-giving about that. And so when we come into this space, shouldn't this time when we gather on Sundays be life-giving? And if it is, it's probably not going to be because it's passive entertainment. It's probably going to be because it's a whole lot more like doing yoga or something like that than we think. Here's the next thing that God taught me. There should be some challenge. Yoga has this interesting dynamic. On one hand, there's always challenge involved. Over the course of an hour, you're pushed to your edge. You're doing these postures and these poses. And you never get to the end of the hour and you're like, I nailed that. Like, it was amazing. I've arrived. Like, I did everything perfectly. Because you're always refining it. You're learning new postures. You're figuring out how to hold them longer. You're being more intentional about them. There's always room for growth. And you're always being challenged. You're being pushed to sort of your edge of where you can grow in this practice. And I've been doing it now for 3.5 years, and I still feel like I'm a rookie. And if you talk to people who've been doing it for decades, they'll say they haven't arrived. It's still just something they're growing in and learning in. Shouldn't coming here on Sunday morning be the same way? Shouldn't we be challenged? Shouldn't we be pushed to our edge, pushed outside of our comfort zone? Because here's the postures that we're working on here. Humility, forgiveness, compassion, mercy, honesty, patience, sacrifice, surrender. I could go on and on, but you never arrive. You never get to the place where you're like, I got the whole forgiveness thing wrapped up. Like, that's so easy. To forgive people that, like, wound me like this. Like, no. We come here and we work on that. And we practice for an hour together. And we're pushed. And so you should never leave church and not feel challenged, not feel taken to your edge. And maybe it's by something one of us says during a sermon. Maybe it's by a song we sing. Maybe it's by a lyric. Maybe it's by a prayer that we pray. Maybe it's just by something someone else says. But we come here and we're challenged. And the reason that's important is because on the other side of challenge is something equally important. It's the next thing. Renewal, healing, and wholeness. This is one of the reasons I sort of fell in love with yoga, because I've tried other things in the past. I've tried working out. I know some of you love to work out, and I've tried jogging, and I know some of you love that, but that always felt like all challenge for me. Like, just all, I just stopped jogging and felt so defeated, right? But for me, there was something, and it might be different for you, but there was something about yoga for me that pushed me, because it was some challenge, but at the end of that, there was always a sense of renewal. And rest, and healing, and wholeness. And as a follower of Jesus, I'll tell you what that personally looks like. When I go to yoga now, when I still go, I take that hour, and it's 1 hour where I'm quiet. I'm not talking. I'm just listening. And it's an hour where I go through these postures, and they're the same postures, and I'm sort of, but all I have to focus on is the physicality and the breathing. And in that, God speaks. And he allows me to give up my anxieties. And he reminds me of his love for me. And he reminds me that I'm a son of God. And he reminds me of what he did on the cross for me and what I can believe about him. And yes, there's always some challenge. But on the other side of that, there's a sense of renewal and healing. and bringing together the fragmented pieces of my lives and make my life and making them whole. And shouldn't church on Sunday morning, when we gather here in this place, shouldn't it be about that? Shouldn't we come in and say, yes, I'm open to being challenged today, but God, what I really need, here's my intention to experience. I need your renewal. I need you to make me new. I need your redemption, your restoration. I need your grace. I need your mercy. I need your healing. Here's an area of my life. I really need your healing, or I need your wholeness. And that intention is important, because it's not about like here's the tasks and here's the, it's just, I need you, God, and I'm going to trust that you meet me here in the middle of that. And we experience those things when we do it together. And that's the next thing that's probably the most important, or one of the most important, is there's a togetherness about it. When I started going to yoga, there's a strong communal element to it. Yeah, you can learn the postures, and then you can do them at home, but something's missing when you try to do them at home. I mean, some people do, but something's missing, because when you walk into a studio and there's 10 more people there, or 20 or 50 people there, and you all start going through these things together, and you're struggling together, and you're being challenged together, and you're sweating together. There's like puddles of sweat, and that's gross and messy, but that's real life. That's togetherness, isn't it? When you're in the trenches, sweating and bleeding together. I think there's something important, even more important, that happens when we come together here. And we come together as followers of Jesus. And can we sing songs at home? Yeah, you could sing them at home. Could you pray some of these prayers at home? Yeah. Could you stand in front of a mirror and preach a sermon to yourself? I mean, I guess you could. But something would be missing. Because as all the writers of the New Testament reminded us, when we come together, it's about encouraging one another. It's about simply being together to say, we're all challenged in the same way, and our lives are all messy in the same way, and we're all pursuing healing and wholeness and God's restoration in the same way. Which leads to just the last one I want to share with you, and that's practice. Because I was reminded when I first started going to yoga, first and foremost, it's a practice. All the teachers would say to me, you're here to practice. You come to your mat to practice. Let the practice do its work. And remember, a practice is just something you pursue intentionally. It can be a lot of things, but something you pursue intentionally that over time takes sweat and effort and intention, but over time brings healing and wholeness. Because healing and wholeness and even formation in your life, those don't happen instantaneously. They only happen over time through practices that we embrace. And so what if we saw attending church on Sunday mornings as a practice? What if we just saw it as a practice? What are we practicing? Well, we practice worship. Worship is just giving your love and affection and desires to something, and we do that all week long. We give our love and affection and desires to our work, to our spouses, to our friends, to our kids, to the Broncos, to the products we consume. And when we come here on Sunday, we say to God, would you reorder and reorient my love and my affections and my desires towards you? That's what we do when we practice worship. We practice listening. So we say, we're going to come into the space and we're going to turn our phones off and we're going to tune out all the distractions and we're just going to listen. We practice togetherness because we can't do all this on our own. I mean, we think we could, but we wouldn't. We'd go to the mountains or we'd do something else. But there's something about coming together. And then one of the most important things is we practice grace. Because we receive grace and we give grace. We receive it from God and we give it to one another. And that prepares us, informs us to be people who give grace to everyone around us during our week. So what if we started seeing coming to church as a practice? I think my parents actually saw it this way. They would have never have used that word, and they'll think this is strange when they listen to the sermon that I'm talking about yoga and church, right? But they saw it as a practice and as a discipline. Now, some of these other elements were missing in my church growing up, right? There was judgment. there. My brother-in-law wore shorts to church, and this lady went off on him one Sunday morning because, you know, you can't worship God if you're wearing shorts. And so it was crazy. But I think my parents saw going to church as a practice. I realize that now it was a practice to them, and they made it a priority. Because practices are priorities. When you want something to form you, you make it a priority. It becomes an immovable thing in your schedule because you realize how important it is in forming and shaping who you want to be. You see, I've made yoga a priority in my life because it's important. If I only went to yoga when it felt good, if I only went to yoga when it fit my schedule well, if I only went to yoga when my favorite teacher was teaching, if I only went when I thought I would get something out of it that I really enjoyed, then I wouldn't go very often, right? And if my parents only took me to church when it was convenient, when we had nothing else going on Sunday morning, when we thought it was going to be entertaining and fun, when we thought our favorite pastor was going to preach, or we were going to sing our favorite songs, or what, like, well, then it wouldn't have been a practice. It would have been a hobby then. And hobbies are fine. We all need hobbies. They just don't form you and shape you the way practices do. So, here's a question I want to close with. Here's a challenge. This is a little bit of challenge for some of you. If you don't come to church very often, would you consider making it a practice? Not because you have to. Not because God is tracking your attendance. We are, but God is not. Joking. I don't. Dan does. But... No, you don't come because you're earning something from God. You don't come because you're supposed to or because you have to. And you don't come because it's entertaining. But would you consider coming because it's a priority? And you want it to be a practice in your life that's going to form you over the long haul. And maybe you do come to church often, but maybe you've never thought about it as a practice. Would you think about it that way? And how would that shape the way you walk into this room? Let me pray, and then we'll sing a couple more songs together. Father God, we know you meet us in these formative practices in our lives, and so God, we pray, even this morning in the 10 or so minutes where we're going to sing a couple more songs and sort of wrap up, that you would just even meet us in the words we sing. And as we hear other voices around us, that there would be something powerful about us singing and worshiping together. Because we need you and we need your grace. And we need one another. And we trust that you came and you died on the cross for us and you rose from the grave to give us life and healing and wholeness. So help us to be open to receiving that now. Pray this in your name. Amen.